Call to order the General Government Consumer and Small Business Protection Committee of the Oregon State Senate. Colleagues, today is April 18th. We're convened for a number of work sessions and introduction of committee measures. So to forecast to everybody what we're going to do today, in case you have other plans that you prefer to engage in, Senate Bill 717, we do plan to adopt the Dash 4s and move it to Ways and Means. Senate Bill 718, we're carrying over. Senate Bill 719, we will adopt amendments and send to Ways and Means. Let's see. And that, for those of you who are watching, will be the Dash 4s, 5s, and 8s. And let's see. We will be rolling over Senate Bill 634. We will be moving Senate Bill 667. We will be rolling over Senate Bill 957. We will be rolling over Senate Bill 823 and rolling over Senate Bill 900. We will address Senate Bill 41 in just a few moments. We will be rolling over Senate Bill 329. Second will be Senate Bill 491, and we do plan to adopt the Dash 3s and move that bill. Senate Bill 610, we will be carrying over. Senate Bill 85, we will be carrying over, which is synonymous with rolling over. We will be moving third Senate Bill 292 with the Dash 4 amendments. We will be sending out Senate Bill 372 as is. We will be carrying over 577, carrying over 611, carrying over 727, carrying over 826, and we will be adopting the Dash 2s for Senate Bill 889, and we are still waiting on some the fiscal for that, and we will move Senate Joint Memorial 10 to the floor. Actually, don't pay too much attention to the order that I told you, because what I'm definitely going to do Senate Bill 41 first, but then I'm going to jump around a little bit. So with that being said, we will open the work session for the possible introduction to committee measures. Do we have to open a work session?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Do you have enough stuff to do already?
I can just briefly.
Yes.
Just give a brief explanation. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LC 4115 prohibits insurers from seeking refund of payment on claims submitted by a health care provider after a date specified by agreement. We had a bill similar to this in committee. However, there was some need for amendments that wouldn't fit, so we got a different LC draft. This will be introduced and most likely referred to the Rules Committee, but it'll be a committee bill from this committee, having had a hearing on that bill. So we have before us LC 4115, dated 4/15/11.
All right, and colleagues, as always, your willingness to accept this as a committee measure does not indicate any affirmative beliefs about this or negative beliefs about this bill. You will have a chance to vote on it potentially later. That being said,
is it 4115?
Yeah.
Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move that the committee accept LC 4115 dated April 15th, 2011 as a committee bill.
Senator George has moved LC 4115 as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none. Seeing none, so ordered. All right, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 41. We do have some discussion that we want to engage in here. Is Dexter still in the room?
Yeah, I've had some constituents giving me a letter.
Oh, there he is. Mr. Attorney General, since you're here, did you want to address the committee at all regarding the Dash 8s, or are you okay with Dexter presenting them?
You know, if Dexter would present them, and if there are any questions for me in the committee, I'd be happy to answer.
That's great. Dexter, if you could please come forward.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council, and turn to the Dash 8 amendments. Essentially, they are divided into two parts. The first is changes in existing law in the procedures for making, requesting and fulfilling public records requests. And the second part of the amendment is deals with exemptions from disclosure of public records. Section 1, I'll just go through section by section.
Yeah, and tell us what it does.
All right, Section 1 is a definitional section. It adds the definition of business day, which is fairly straightforward. It, and more significantly, it adds, modifies the definition of public record. This is on page 2. And that it excludes electronic records that are destroyed in conformity with the appropriate retention schedules adopted by the state archivist. Even if there is the technological means are exist for those records to be subsequently recreated again. So in other words, if you have electronic records on a hard drive, and I have to apologize, I don't know much about this computer stuff, so it's going to be simple. But let's say you had public records on a hard drive, and you push delete in conformity with the appropriate retention schedule for those records. I understand there are computer gurus out there who can nevertheless make it appear again, but nevertheless that would not be considered a public record. Also, electronic metadata, which I only have a dim view of what that really is, but electronic metadata, it actually what it is information regarding the direct record, like information about where it came from or how it was created, that sort of thing. That too is excluded from the definition of public record in this amendment. Section 2 of the proposal is basically, we're over here on page 3, contains some new language that provides that if you have an outstanding balance of fees due for a previous public records request, that the public body need not act upon your request until you pay the fees. This is for previous requests. Okay, Section 3, which is the real meat of the amendment in terms of process, is a rewrite of ORS 192-440. And there's really two significant parts to this. The first is, you'll see over here on page 4, it begins on page 4 and goes on for a while, but it sets forth some timelines by which a public body, once it has received a request, must act to provide some kind of response. And generally, I'm going to just quickly skim through this, but generally it has to do with the public body makes an estimate of the amount of time it will take to fulfill the request and sends a notice to the requester with that estimate and saying, okay, we estimate that it will take, say, 6 hours of staff time to fulfill this request. And under this, as an example, that would put you in lines 23 through 25 as more than 5 but less than 6. So you then have 15 days to respond to fulfill the request. And you will see also that if the request involves off-site, the retrieval of off-site records, that that is the number of days needed to get the records from an off-site depository to where the public body can review them is also added to the days for fulfilling the request. This is given as a notice to the requester, and then there's some exceptions beginning over on page 5 in subsection 3, where for particular public bodies, essentially small local governments or school districts of a certain size, that they can actually take twice as long to fulfill the request as other public bodies. And that's basically the essence of page 5. Then there is, if the public body determines, it's made an estimate, and under the existing rules that we've just talked about, they have, say, 15 days. But nevertheless, the nature of the request is such that it is too difficult. The public body feels it is too difficult to nevertheless comply with those deadlines. It can request an additional extension from, if it is a state agency, the Attorney General, or if it is from a local, if the public body is a local government, then they request that extension from the district attorney, which is parallels the appeal process that is in existing law for when a public body determines that a record is exempt from disclosure and then the requester wishes to challenge that determination. That's the process that you see set forth on page 6, going on to page 7. There are some exemptions for basically separation of powers purposes, whereby if either the judicial department, the judicial department, or the legislative branch determines that they need more time, they go ahead and make that determination, and a person may challenge that by going directly to court. Subsection 7 is basically it's new language, but it reflects what is, I believe, existing law, that the public body, when it receives a request, must provide an acknowledgement to the requester. This does set forth a new timeline of 5 business days, and that acknowledgement, it merely needs to say that we received the request, but it can provide additional information that is otherwise required. Okay, and then subsection 8 is the substantive response that the public body must give when it ultimately has gathered and reviewed the public records. And that can be copies or an opportunity to inspect, or if it determines that it does not have the public records, that's the time, that's the response that is given. And it sets forth, as you'll see, there's not a lot of change to existing law with respect to the response, the ultimate response that a public body gives to a requester. That is on pages 7 and 8. And let me stop there before we get into the fee issue and see if there are any questions.
Yep, keep rolling.
Okay. Moving on to subsection 10. That sets forth new guidelines regarding the fees that a public body may charge for responding to a request. And that is basically the actual cost of both staff time and paper or whatever office supplies are needed to respond to the request. However, staff time is capped, and you'll see that language in lines 5 through 8 of page 9. Staff time is generally capped at 4 times the minimum wage. So it's whatever the actual cost of staff time is in responding to the request. But if that exceeds 4 times the minimum wage, then 4 times the minimum wage is the staff time. Then there are some exceptions where, in fact, it nevertheless returns to actual cost, and that is generally for staff time incurred by certain professionals you see listed there, and in lines 11 through 17. And what's significant there is that attorneys are excluded, so many public records requests are reviewed by attorneys. They are not subject to actual cost, but rather are subject to the four times the minimum wage cap. And then there's lines 18 through 23 is another exception to the cap for certain agencies that the Constitution or other law limits the expenditure of monies they otherwise have to certain specified purposes. A good example of that is the Department of Transportation. The majority of its budget is gas tax money. The Constitution limits the use of that to road maintenance and construction. And so if they had to, they would not have the means to pay to absorb this cost from those funds. So there'd be some uncertainty about how they would actually absorb the cost. That's why they are an example of a public body that is excluded from the limitation on fees. They will charge the actual cost. That is the substance of the fee portion too. There's a little bit more language on the page 10 about the requester. A public body can elect to have the requester prepay the cost, but that's the essence of the fee limitations. Is there questions on that?
Keep rolling.
Okay. The final subsection 15 is essentially a restatement. This is of the new language. A restatement of existing law about appeals process if a public body fails to respond in conformance with the provisions that you've already looked at. Then the requester can petition for review of that, and as I mentioned, that is just like the request for extensions of time. If it's a state agency, generally it goes to the attorney general. If it's a local government, it goes to the appropriate district attorney, and as we will see in a couple of pages, if it is the judicial branch or the legislative branch, the appeal goes directly to circuit court. Section 4, a brief section, but it allows a public body and a requester to agree, kind of like enter into a side contract with respect to each individual request, to different fees and different timelines for response. Section 5, I'm going to move through that quickly, is the Attorney General review of denials of requests and the modification of timelines there, basically just to incorporate the concept of business day as opposed to calendar day. And 6 and 7 are the same thing. Section 7 is an amendment to ORS 192-480. Current law provides for elected officials, if someone challenges the denial of disclosure of public records for that are in the custody of an elected official, that goes under existing law to circuit court. These amendments essentially just clarify that. There is lines on page 15, lines 22 through 25 add other constitutional offices that are exist at the local level. And then subsection 3 essentially is provides some specific guidance for denials, who gets to review a denial of public record by a trial court judge when the case is pending, or denial by a court of appeals or judge or Supreme Court justice. And that's a special procedure that goes directly, I believe, to the Supreme Court. Section 9 is a new provision that basically provides that when a when a record is in a, that is confidential is inadvertently disclosed, that if certain conditions are met, and you see them on page 17, lines 7 through 12, that there is no liability that arises as a result of that disclosure. And then Section 10, finally, is a direction to the Attorney General to provide training materials and model request forms and have those available on the Internet. So that's the procedure part of the draft. Questions about that? All right. The next part, and really the rest of the bill, deals with exemptions. And with respect to that, basically right now there are, in existing law, there are two huge sections in the public records law, ORS 192.501 and 192.502. And a lot of exemptions, hundreds literally of exemptions throughout the rest of the ORS, the terms of which each one is a little bit different. What this bill does is to reorganize into large categories the existing 192.501 and 192.502 exemptions. It does not change the substance of those exemptions, but it does reorganize them and then restates them based on these broad categories. Like, for example, Section 11 deals with records relating to criminal investigations. Subsection 1, for example, contains what is currently somewhere in ORS 192.501 or 192.502 without changing the language therein. Subsection 2 is, you will see something quite different, however. What that subsection is, again, for criminal investigations, is essentially a list of ORS sections that are elsewhere in the statutes and a brief parenthetical description of what the exemption that is related to is. And I'm not going to, this will give you an idea of how many exemptions there are throughout ORS. There are, as I said, hundreds. I'm not going to go through this in detail. I'm just going to quickly move through the next 10 sections or so. They are all structured exactly this way. So any question about that to begin with? Okay. Then Section 12, again, it relates to exemptions for non-criminal investigations. The first subsections deal just with existing, replicate what is in existing 501 or 502. And then the last subsection is, again, kind of an index of other exemptions elsewhere and a brief parenthetical description of them. And you can see this one goes on for a considerable period of time. Section 13 over on page 22, the same structure for exemptions of public records relating to personal privacy. There's a considerable number of them. And then we go all the way over to page 30, section 14. public records relating to business and the exemptions applicable to those kind of records. This one will go on a long ways, too. Thirty-eight is the next two categories. Section 15 sets forth just a few exemptions applicable to crime victims, and then Section 16 sets forth some applicable to whistleblower information.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
Thanks, sir. So, Dexter, basically all these sections just restate the existing law and then clarify a reference if it doesn't restate it, where to go find it, correct?
That is correct. It
so,
is.
So really not, we're not creating anything new. We're just suddenly putting it all in one place so the citizens know where to look instead of having to hunt back.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, that is correct.
If there's a reason to go through each section.
So I can move on. If we don't want to go through all the, we're all about halfway through. But let me skip in the interest of time.
Yeah, sir. If I could, Senator George brought up a good suggestion. Is there a way that we can just kind of get the Reader's Digest version about the difference between the sixes and the eights?
Next, what we're trying to, basically what the committee has a choice on is, I'm not sure we're going to be able to get to, we're going to have to move this, we're going to have to figure out where to move this bill. And the dash sixes are basically the local governments and state agencies attempt in good faith to put amendments together, and eights are the AG's attempt to put a good faith. And I think everybody's working hard. And I think what the committee's going to need to decide is what we put into the bill as the next step moving forward. And so I think maybe the differential between the six and the eights is probably where it'll be most advantageous to us. Because I think what's going to happen is that this bill is going to continue to be negotiated as it goes forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what we're trying to do is figure out which ones we should put into the bill.
This whole exemption thing is not in the dash six, so that is the biggest change. Other than that, there is a slightly different process in the dash six, but before I move on to the dash six, I think I just want to flag the end of the exemption section, a couple of important provisions. First, we're over here now on page 52. Section 21 of that says essentially that all of the information in all of these examples that references sections outside of the public records law, that parenthetical information, in fact, is just for the convenience of the reader and does not change the substance of the law involved. And then Section 22A, which is right below, talks about the repeal of the two existing big exemption sections and the reorganization of that material into these 10 sections. And I'll note lines 24 through 27 that this is essentially a statement by the legislature that nothing is intended to alter existing judicial or administrative interpretation of the meaning and scope of existing exemptions. So basically this is a reorganization effort and an indexing effort, but it does not change the substance. That's your intent by if you were to adopt this, that it does not change the substance of existing exemptions. Okay. So with that, then, I'll switch to the dash sixes and walk through that as briefly as I can. Again, there's a lot of similarities here. First section is a definition section. The definition of public record is different. It replaces the existing definition in its entirety. You can read it as well as I can. Lines 9 through 13 are, that is what a public record is. The dash 8s, by contrast, did not change the definition of what a public record is. Then the does not include piece is, in fact, the same as the dash 8s. So there's a new definition of what a record, public record is. That's different from the dash 8s. The what it does not include is basically the same.
Yes, Senator George.
Dexter, what's the difference between why change the definition of public record? What's the purpose of changing that definition?
And that was a policy choice by the requesters.
What does it do?
The existing definition is very expansive, though it's kind of old-fashioned. The new definition, line 10 is important. It says, exists in any form capable of retention by a custodian. So, for example, a voicemail message may not be, depending on the technology, may not be capable of retention because voicemail, I believe, it, depending on the system you're using, it suddenly disappears, and that's the way it is. And, public records, that is to say, information under the traditional definition, information that relates to the conduct of the public's business, that is nevertheless on a website somewhere that is outside of the control of the public body, a social media website, for example, the operator of the social media website will, they're going to decide what's going to happen with that information. And this would, unlike the traditional definition, I think this would exclude that.
And so, Mr. Chair?
Yes,
just to clarify, you're talking about the dash 6?
Dash 6, yes. Yeah. And the definition of public record in the dash 6. Okay, the next substantive differences between the two are over beginning on page 4, and this is a similar concept but different standard for timelines for responding to a public records request. There is a similar tiered structure, but it's based on either a quantity of the size of the public record, 100 pages or 300 pages, that sort of thing, or the estimate of time. So it's one or the other. And then there's kind of a default tier that is on page 5. That is, if it doesn't describe in the first two, it falls in, or is going to be more than 15 hours to gather and review, it will fall into this final tier. And then their timelines themselves are different as well. For example, this is again going to be going into detail. Is this the kind of detail we want? Or I can just say the timelines are different between the two. Okay, we'll just say the timelines are different.
Radically different. That's the right adjective.
Then if the timelines can't, in the opinion of the public body, be met, there is, again, an appeal process to either the Attorney General or the District Attorney if you're a local government. The standards are slightly different for when an appeal is, or for when an additional time is to be granted by the Attorney General versus in the dash 6s versus the dash 8s. The presumption is in the dash 6s that an extension will be granted, and in the dash 8s it's kind of the presumption is the other way, that it won't be granted unless it's unduly burdensome for the public body.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Buckley.
But isn't the dash 8 pretty closer to existing law?
No.
Because district attorneys already and attorney generals are already in the existing law.
Well, that's true. And the dash 6s, Mr. Chair and Senator Boquist, don't change that. But it's under existing law, I believe, a requester has a reasonable period of time to respond. And so.
What does that mean?
The kind of existing law is somewhere in between the two. But existing law doesn't have any time, any hard and fast timelines like either the dash 6s or dash 8s have.
Yeah, so we're going to stand it out, so we'll do that fourth thing. length of time is going to go?
We don't hide it more. Other than that emphasis, though,
the initiative process.
The rest of the piece about timelines is the same. Moving over, beginning on page 9, is the section about fees, and that is very similar. It's got the cap of 4 times minimum wage. There is a difference in that the cap does not apply to attorney work as well, and that is in the dash 8s, the cap does apply to attorney work. Essentially, the rest of section 3 and section 4 is the same. Or very similar. Looking at it very quickly, I think that's there are minor differences, but there's nothing more in the way of significant differences other than that the dash 6s do not deal with exemptions at all.
Okay. All right, colleagues, we are in work session, so I want to get a sense of the committee. My sense is that we should move the dash 8s in and figure out what we're going to do by Wednesday, depending on what paperwork we get back and where the committee might fall. But I wanted to get the sense of the committee.
I'll admit that if you want a motion.
Well, why don't we put a motion on the table and then
I'll
discuss
it. I'll let the vice chair speak first and then I'll make the motion.
Okay.
Senator George.
I think we've had a great group of people working on this. And Dexter, thank you very much for all your hard work. I know this has been a long process. We've had a real diverse group of folks working on this, and I think everybody's negotiated in really good faith. As I expressed to the chair before the committee, my preference is to move the dash 6s in and kick it to rules and let the negotiations continue. I know that there's some tentativeness on that strategy with the committee. Here's kind of where we are, is that I think from where I stand, the dash 8s are closer to where I ultimately want to be, but I think everybody's negotiating in good faith. But dash 6s aren't where I want to necessarily go. The dash 8s, there's not been proper vetting of them by all of the parties that are involved. And so, you know, my preference is put in the dash 6s and continue to negotiate. If the rest of the committee views the dash 8s is where we should start the negotiations for continuation, I don't have a real big problem with that. I think that both the AG and all the local and state government folks have done a great job of trying to put all their ideas on the table, and we're not trying to shove anything down anybody's throat. I just think that it's just kind of where we start negotiations from this point forward. And it's just been a timeline problem, really. I think everybody's done really fast work, and I appreciate it, but we just don't have a timeline in this session to really be able to vet out both sides. And we're not that far apart. I mean, it's very, very close at this point. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
If no one else speak, I'll move the dash 8 amendments into the main bill.
Senator Boquist moves the dash 8s into Senate Bill 41.
The motion.
Yeah.
I agree with Senator George. The question is, you know, I've learned in this process after 4 terms, it's better to deal from the strength. We need to get people together and refine this and get it down. And the dash 8s, frankly, two things jump out at me that are important. One is the reorganization for public transparency. That was where the goal we started down the road is to create transparency so the citizens of the state can go one place and find it. And since that's the amendment that still has the transparency, that's fair. The other concern I have is that, you know, that we not pass a bill that makes Oregon the longest records request state in the nation. And so we've got to be, for a state that says we're transparent, we kind of got to tighten that down. And I'm not sure the dash 6 gets there, but I'm certain that the local agencies and local state government and everything else working with the AG, if we put the dash 8 in, can come to an agreement.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
I agree with Senator Boquist. I think that First of all, I want to thank everyone who's worked so hard on this. I know there's been a lot of work up to the time of this work session. But I agree that a large part is the access of information and having everything together in one area, I think, is an important part. And because the discussion and negotiation is continuing, I think it makes sense to put in the Dash 8, even though it hasn't had all the vetting it needs, there will be more vetting. So I would support the motion that Senator Boquist made.
That's right, and even if we do pass through with the Dash 8, we're still only halfway through this process, that's for sure. So any other further discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair,
on the Dash 8, Senator George.
I just want to make sure I point out is that there is some, and I think Dexter left, so Dexter, maybe we can get you up here for one more question if you could. The real question really came down to on this is that there was a concern about putting in the sort of the list of the different exemptions by putting them into this bill, that we could have the impact of changing law. And that's one of the big concerns that state and local agencies have, state agencies and local governments have, is that somehow we could end up changing a lot of case law with this bill by creating this indexing. And I would like to hear, if I could, legislative counsel's perspective on the difference between the sixes and the eights on that point. Dexter, if you can talk with that a little bit.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator George. Again, the Dash 6 is simply do not alter existing statutory exemptions at all. Don't address them at all. So the Dash 6s would not alter case law because there's no change. The Dash 8s, I will again turn to, I hope I can find it. I think it's the... Yeah, on page 52, sections 21 and 22A, they express your intention, if you were to pass this, of not altering existing law, notwithstanding that you're reorganizing it, that it expresses your intention of not altering existing case law and administrative rulings in this area.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
Got that, Dexter. The other half of it, I believe you said that it does change the definition of a public record, which would mean the Full Employment Act for all lawyers. If the definition of public record is changed, which I think you briefed us, would that not mean that you would have a new definition of public record?
Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, both amendments change in one way or another the definition of public record.
Dexter, under the Dash 6s, specifically the definition of public record is changed on page 2, where it deletes the current definition of public record, replaces it, and I understand the Dash 8s do not change that. Is that correct?
No, that's not quite correct, Mr. Chair, Senator George. It excludes, so there's two new things that it excludes, which is electronic records that were deleted in conformity with the state archivist schedule for deleting, destroying public records, but that nevertheless you can, through the wonders of technology, bring back to life again. Those are not considered public records, and electronic metadata is not considered a public record. So it does change it in that sense. In existing law, it's certainly arguable that if you could somehow restore a deleted electronic record, it is a public record.
But the Dash 6 has dramatically changed the definition of public record, and the Dash 8 just slightly adds some exemptions. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, whether it's dramatic or not, the difference in the Dash 6 is that there is a completely new definition of public record. Whether there's considerable overlap between that and existing law.
Okay. So, colleagues, we're going to have to move on shortly. We have a motion being considered by the committee on the Dash 8s, moving that into the bill. Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, so then on Wednesday, we would have to decide whether or not proper vetting has been done and whether to move the bill or to send it to rules.
That's correct. I haven't completely decided whether or not we would try it, and of course, depending on whether or not the fiscal was back by Wednesday,
okay.
Whether or not to send it to rules or to send it to the floor.
Okay, I'm fine.
It sounds like the majority of the committee is committed to the Dash 8s, and I understand. I actually think they're a good draft. So I'm not going to stand in the way. I'm not going to object to the amendments. I just hope that the parties involved continue to work on this, and they have so far. I have no reason to believe they're not going to, but obviously, I see it from a slightly different perspective, but this is fine with me, and so.
Okay, and I do want to mention that for those of you who were advocating the Dash 6, as Senator George said, that was his, the first discussion point. Let's move the Dash 6s. So we have. I also wanted to thank Senator George, as well as the Attorney General's office and the local governments who've been working very diligently on this bill, as well as my own staff person, Mary Alicia Briggs, for her work in sitting in representing the chair in those meetings. So we have that motion. Is there, with no further discussion, is there any objection to moving the Dash 8s? Seeing none. So ordered, and I will then close the work session on Senate Bill 41, and we will move on. I will now go to Senate Bill 719, work session. I will open a work session on Senate Bill 719, and colleagues, we anticipate moving a number of amendments and then sending this on to Ways and Means. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You asked this bill. We heard on March 16th, last week we heard it as well. This is the bill that adds insurance to the definition of real estate goods or services for purpose of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. I believe the chair has asked me to review three amendments.
The Dash 4s, the Dash 5s, and Dash 8s.
The Dash 4s delete the amendments to ORS 746.230. That is the one that deals with Attorney General's rulemaking. The amendment also stipulates that the Attorney General may not adopt rules respecting certain actions taken by prosecuting attorneys when the conduct subject to the action involves insurance, except with prior review and approval of the proposed rules by the Director of DCBS.
And if I could speak to that amendment, the Dash 4, one of the concerns that we heard about Senate Bill 719 is that it would set up competing regulators, and that might be confusing to the insurance industry. And so we took that to heart, and this amendment would ensure that the Attorney General is restricted from being involved in the rulemaking process.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should note we have a fiscal and revenue impact statement for that. The fiscal impact statement speaks to, and it's the same for the fives as well, it speaks to the increased caseload that the Judicial Department will possibly see due to the opportunity for attorney fees, punitive damages, and guaranteed amount of statutory damages. So if I can move to the Dash 5s.
Yes.
The Dash 5 specifies that persons on whose behalf another person transacts insurance shall indemnify the other person from any cost, loss, or damages, including attorney fees that may arise out of a claim, action, or judgment for a violation. That is the Dash 5s, Mr. Chair, and then the Dash 8s deletes changes to ORS 646.608 and 746.230, essentially removing application of the Unlawful Claims Practices Act from the measure. Those are the three amendments, Mr.
Thank you, Patrick.
And there's no fiscal impact or minimal fiscal impact statement for the Dash 8s.
Okay. And the Dash 5s, we heard a lot of good feedback on Senate Bill 719 that the insurance brokers had major concerns that they would be the subject of litigation, and so we decided to make sure that they could be indemnified by this bill, and it would not be subject to as much legal liability. And then the Dash 8s were from Senator Bonamici and her concern that the claims settlement
Claims Settlement Practices Act.
Thank you. Was potentially vague and could be a problem piece of the bill. Is that?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that the intent in putting that in was to simply say that this bill is to level the playing field, that all other businesses in the state of Oregon operate under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. And in fact, last February, when we removed the exemption for loans and credit, that's all we did was remove the exemption. This original bill, as drafted, had the removal of the exemption for insurance, but it also had the additional provision that any violation of the Unfair Claim Settlement Practices Act was automatically a violation of the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, and I thought that was a step that maybe down the road we could consider after we really look at the provisions of that act, but I thought that this bill would be better just to level the playing field and say that all businesses operate under the state's primary consumer protection statute.
Okay.
Thank you for allowing me to explain that, Mr. Chair.
Good. Senator Bonamici, would you like to make a motion on the amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 4 Amendment to Senate Bill 719.
Senator Bonamici has moved the Dash 4 Amendment to Senate Bill 719. Is there any objection or any discussion?
It's an improvement.
Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Bonamici?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 5 Amendment to Senate Bill 719.
Senator Bonamici has moved the Dash 5 Amendment to Senate Bill 719. Is there any discussion?
Another improvement.
Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 8 Amendment to Senate Bill 719.
Senator Bonamici has moved the Dash 8 Amendment to Senate Bill 719. Is there any discussion?
There's no objection. I've just got to get here with Senator Bonamici to see what this really does. So.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to object because I'm not sure exactly what it does.
That's right.
Better to keep your mouth quiet.
I'm assuming it's an improvement, she's going to tell me.
And assume, yes. Okay. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Bonamici.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate Bill 719, as amended with the Dash 4, Dash 5, and Dash 8 amendments, go to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Senator,
I don't know if I phrased that properly, but I think everybody knows it.
Good enough. Senator Bonamici has moved Senate Bill 719, as we just amended, to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, I'm about two-thirds there, so I'll get together with Senator Bonamici before it comes to the floor and see what's what on that bottom end.
Okay.
But I'll be a no vote right now.
Fair enough.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, we've done so much of this. I'd feel more comfortable moving without a recommendation.
Okay. Further discussion? Well, I appreciate your concerns, Senator Monroe.
I mean, I just haven't internalized all of the changes we just made. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that. I think that we have had this bill before us for quite some time.
I was a no vote before, but now I want to know if I want to get to be a yes vote, but I don't understand it well enough yet.
Okay. Are you suggesting we have a motion on the table? Are you suggesting you would be a no vote if we...
I would ask the maker of the motion to change it to... without recommendation, or I would ask the chair to hold this for one more time so that I get a chance, so that I can understand and talk to some people about what these amendments actually do.
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to you.
Actually, let's can we stand in recess for a moment?
Yes, stand in recess.
Okay. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I withdraw my objection to the motion.
Okay. We were having discussion about what to do with Senate Bill 719, and I think Senator Monroe has decided to move the bill to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation, and Ways and Means can continue the conversation down there. So, Debbie, could you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
No.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
No.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Motion passes, and this is on to the committee of Ways and Means. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 719, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 717. And we have the paperwork on the dash 4. So, Patrick, if you could please describe the dash 4 amendments to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 717-4 amendment adds whereas clause limits application to individual and small market employer health benefit plans, changes permissive to requiring language for a department to consider whether rates are reasonable but not excessive, specifies a public meeting may be called in cases where rates increase by 7% or more and affect 1,000 or more policyholders, outlines purpose of hearing, provides for certification of individuals or groups to intervene, specifies access to information and opportunity for request for a public meeting by interveners, changes the date for approval for or disapproval of rate filing from 10 days after the close of public comment to 90 days after the beginning of the public comment period if the insurer has provided all the necessary information, specifies that the director does not approve or modify rate filing by the end of the period, it is considered disapproved, specifies who is to be provided notice of rate filing approvals, modifications, or disapprovals, provides for reimbursement of interveners and attorney general for reasonable expenses related to expert testimony, and I should clarify that that was the dash 3s, the difference between the dash 3s and the dash 4s, is that the references to requiring the participation by the attorney general in the process is removed by the dash 4s, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, colleagues.
Obviously, would not be reimbursed by that.
So, we've heard a lot of testimony, a lot of small businesses who are concerned about the exponential increases in health insurance premiums. And the premises of Senate Bill 717 and the dash 3s and dash 4s are essentially this, that one, these issues are too important to small business to have happen behind closed doors. And two, that those who are represented tend to get a better deal. I think we see it in the Public Utility Commission world where people who are represented by the Citizens Utility Board and people that are represented by the industrial customers in the Northwest tend to get a better deal because they've elbowed their way up to the table. And in this very public process, I think these issues are too important to small business to have them excluded. So there has been some discussion about whether or not the Attorney General's office should be a party in representing the public interest in Senate Bill 717. And so we had a dash 3 that kept the Attorney General in and a dash 4 that took the Attorney General out. So as with the dash 4s, what you would allow is a small business group like the Realtors Association or 10 policyholders to be the interveners and hire their own expert testimony, whereas some other states allow the Attorney General to intervene there. I think primarily the main reason why I've decided to go with the dash 4s is because we don't have the fiscals back yet on the dash 3s, and regardless of what the fiscal statement is, I think I've become convinced that there will be a fiscal cost to this, so it's going to have to go to Ways and Means regardless. My thoughts are let's move it along in the process and let Ways and Means work its magic on the bill down there. But I think the other thing that I'd like to call to the attention of the committee is that while there's almost uniform opposition by the health insurance lobby to this bill, which I can appreciate, I hope they will also understand that we tried to take their concerns into account and make the bill as workable as possible. And let me tell you a couple of the ways that we've done that. What I heard from the marketing director at Kaiser is that he wasn't particularly wild about the hearings idea of having public hearings for health insurance companies to justify their premium increases. But he said, look, if you're going to do it, please please try to do it very close to the 30-day comment period early on in the process. And I thought that made sense because we didn't want to interfere with their ability to price their product and get it out to market. So all of this, this additional public process, which is really just a public meeting and the option for a public hearing down the road, all has to happen within the first 45 days. And we really have tried to make this bill workable for the health insurance industry. That's pretty much the heart of the bill. It allows for small business to elbow their way up to the table. Most of this work that is happening, in my opinion, is already in this bill is already being done by the insurance division, and will not require any addition. I mean, it'll require some additional work, but not an exorbitant amount of additional work. But basically, what we're doing is we're shining a light on this and ensuring that small business has a seat at that table and has the potential to intervene in this. Say, you know, we've got a second opinion on whether or not this premium increase is reasonable. So that's what where we are with the Dash 4s. Again, colleagues, my intention would be to send this down to Ways and Means and let them figure out the fiscal part of it. So, Senator Bonamici, would you like to make a motion?
And Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 717.
Senator Bonamici has moved the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 717. Is there any discussion? Senator Monroe?
Has Teresa seen this amendment?
Yes, sir. I believe she has.
Oh, Mr. Chair, if I may, the Insurance Division has to review the amendment in order for the fiscal statement to be drafted. Yeah. So, yeah, they've seen it.
Okay. I just wondered if she had an opinion on it, whether it would be workable for her office.
Well, the Insurance Division has made it very, very clear that things are just fine the way they are now, and they are they're not seeking any additional legislative authority.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Chair.
Senator George.
I agree with you. I think the Dash 4 amendments make this bill a lot better. But I'll be supporting or not objecting to your amendments with Dash 4s. And so then I guess the question is will I be supporting the bill? And I don't think the bill quite gets there yet. This has been a long journey for me to understand how this process works. I'm just not quite comfortable changing this thing so radically at this time, although with it going down to Ways and Means, I'm going to be interested to see how they come out with it. So I appreciate the Dash 4 amendments that make it a lot better.
Thank you. Further discussion? All right. Debbie, would you please call the roll?
I didn't make the motion on the bill yet. I only made the motion on the amendment. Did we finish that part?
I need good help here. Yes. So is there no further discussion about the Dash 4? Is there an objection?
On the amendment.
Okay. On the amendment.
All right. Mr. Chair, I move...
Wait, we get it. Seeing none, so ordered.
Okay.
Senator Bonamici.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 717 as amended with the Dash 4 amendments.
Hold on for a second.
This one I will not support unless it's without except neutral.
So do you, Mr. Chair, do you want me to make that, or do you want to take a recess?
Won't work this time. The Ways and Means without recommendation, I'll support that.
Okay. Would you like to explain your concerns?
I still have concerns that this would improperly hamstring the department in terms of their ability to negotiate insurance rates and so on, and their ability to talk to people on a maybe private individual basis and so on. This might make that illegal. And I sometimes, as we all know in this building, sometimes one-on-one conversations are the only ways to get things done. So that makes me nervous. I will support going, sending it to Ways and Means and let them chew on it for a while. But I had a conversation earlier today with the director, and she still has that concern, and so do I.
Senator Bocas, how do you feel about this?
I can't support $400,000.
Neither can I, and I think that once we get this down to Ways and Means, we'll find out that it doesn't cost anywhere near that, which is pretty much the entire budget that they're spending on this endeavor as we speak. But All right. Well, I can appreciate the where the committee is. You have not made a motion at this point.
I haven't quite finished making them. I started, but I didn't quite finish. So I was waiting for the cue from you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, I think my preference would be to send it down to respect Senator Monroe's concerns, even though we have a disagreement on that. But that's what this place is all about. So if you could reframe your motion, please.
I move Senate Bill 717 as amended with a -4 amendment to the Ways and Means Committee with no recommendation.
Senator Bonamici has moved Senate Bill 717 to Ways and Means without recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair. Can't do a minority report, so.
I would be interested to see what that might look like, actually.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
First, I want to state that I believe that the department has, the insurance division has done quite a bit of work on this issue since we passed House Bill 2009 in the last session. And I think they have made some progress in the area. And I appreciate all the work that everyone has done on this bill to bring about transparency, and I support that. I do remain somewhat concerned about whether we are whether we have the language quite right to make sure that what we want done in the public is the justification of and the process of reviewing an increase in rates. I just want to make sure that we aren't tying the director's hands on issues that aren't necessarily related to the requested rate increase, but there may be the need for discussion about a related issue with the same insurance company during the time that the rate review is pending, for example, that may be problematic. So I believe that the transparency goal is good. I'm just concerned that the language may be potentially a bit too broad for what we really, I believe, intend. So I'm supporting the motion, and I do hope that everyone continues to work on this so that we get the policy that we're after to make sure that we have the transparency in the justification of the rate increase.
Sure, Mr. Chair, she just described my minority report.
Any other discussion? Good. Well, I really appreciate the concerns put forth quite diligently by the insurance division on this, and as they had mentioned from the beginning of the process, they believe that things are fine in how the rate review happens and that there's no further statutory requirements necessary. I think if you look at what the bill does, and basically what it says is these kinds of meetings that have been happening behind closed doors between the decision makers and the insurance companies would be required to begin to take place in public. Within 10 days of the beginning of the comment period, it would allow small business to ask questions of the insurance company about their actuarial justification, because one of the things that we also learned in our testimony when we heard from Barbara Niehaus is that just by looking at the information that is on the web, one cannot come to a determination about whether or not that premium increase is reasonable. You have to ask basic questions about what the underlying assumptions are. And I was also concerned that in the most recent United Healthcare filing, where you had an intervener, Osberg, when there was a meeting between the insurance company of United Healthcare and the representatives of the insurance division, despite having an intervener, they decided not to bring that intervener into that meeting, which I just can't understand. So the main reason for having the public meeting is to allow questions to be asked and to give small business a chance to get their questions about the filing responded to. But I can appreciate people's concerns. I think this will go on to Ways and Means, and we can continue to have the discussion as we move along down there. So
have we moved
we adopted the -4.
We just have a motion on the table. We need a vote.
All right. So, Debbie, if you could please call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
No.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
No.
Chair Shue?
Chair votes aye. On to Ways and Means. All right. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 717. And Let's see if I can find a non-controversial vote. I'll get together.
We don't have any.
You rolled all of them for some reason, and we don't get that. The ones we were going to vote for, you moved.
I think I will move down to...
Free trial.
1092. I don't like that bill anymore. I will open a work session on Senate Bill 292. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 292 is the bill that deals with free trial offers. We heard on February 28th. We have before us the Dash 4 Amendment. The Dash 4 Amendment specifies that the measure's provisions do not apply to free offers made in connection with services that are subject to the FCC Act, Federal Communications, Act of 1934. You have in your packet that amendment as well as a statement of no fiscal impact and no revenue impact. The measure doesn't have a subsequent referral, so it's all ready to go, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Are
you guys going to work session? Yes, we are.
Not a motion?
Yeah, you want to move the Dash 4s?
Yep. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 929, dated
292.
I'm looking for it right now.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Dyslexia.
292-4 amendments, dated April 5th, 2011.
Senator George has moved the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 292. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonham.
Thank you. These are Senator George's amendments, which I have said I will support. I must say that we had a lot of work group meetings with the entities that are affected or rather excluded with the Dash 4 amendment. We would have had, let me just say, we would have had much smaller work group meetings had this amendment been adopted early on, because we had a lot of people around the table from the industry, but because they are regulated elsewhere, I agreed to support this amendment to move this bill along. And we still will, Mr. Chair, be doing some good work with this bill. A lot of the problems that we heard about with free trials are not from entities that are regulated by the FCC, but are things like weight loss pills and memory pills and super night cream and tooth whitener, as Karen Garst testified in the committee. So I believe that there are still companies out there who should be under this bill, even with the amendment, and so I'll gladly support the Dash 4.
All right.
Sure.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, Dash 4 is an amendment that I requested from Senator Bonamici, and I just want to thank her for allowing me to put it in. I just have a real bias right now, and I want to just kind of express this on the record. My concern is when I travel around the world that our cell phone companies are so far behind the times compared to the rest of the world. And what's happened is that in a lot of developing countries, they never put in hard wires, so they're leaping ahead of us in technology. And I just have a really hard time putting more burden on any of the technology companies at this point trying to expand their service to consumers. I think the expansion of technology is the most important thing for businesses and consumers in this country. And so I requested this amendment from Senator Bonamici, and I truly appreciate the fact that she allowed me to put it in. And otherwise, I think that she's brought me a long ways on this bill. I think for the most part, I wasn't all that excited about 292 when we first started talking about it, but I think she's convinced me that there's a big problem out there among these internet offers, and so I'm going to support the bill with the Dash 4 amendments. So thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
I'm just happy to support an amendment that references a federal law that actually occurred before I was born.
Wow.
Did we get
that? I won't ask.
1934 is before I was born.
Oh, I just to tell you. Do you think they have strings in number 10 candidates?
The motion is on the table to adopt the Dash 4, yes, Mr. Chair.
That's right. Okay, is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none. So ordered, Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 292 as amended by the Dash 4 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved Senate Bill 292 with the Dash 4s to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Debbie, could you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici.
Aye.
Senator Boquist.
Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Vice Chair George.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes. As Senator Bonamici, would you like to carry that?
I would. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator George, you want to co-carry?
I'm Senator Bonamici. Got me in favor of this. Did this to me. I had to carry lighters onto the floor.
Toy lighters.
Yeah, toy lighters.
I recall it well.
And I've been mocked ever since.
Close the work session on Senate Bill 292. And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 491. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 491 is a bill we heard back in March on the 23rd. It's a bill that modifies requirements for notice of foreclosure and termination of tenancy for residential dwellings that are in foreclosure. You have in your packets the Dash 3 amendment. It's pretty sizable. I believe we have some folks here that could provide a brief run-through of that amendment if you like. The Dash 3 amendments make a few small changes to the bill, which were discussed at our March 23rd meeting. The bill, as amended with the Dash 3 amendment, has no fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and I'm hoping you also got the three-page walkthrough of the changes made by the Dash 3 amendment, Mr. Chair.
All right. And is it your impression that there is consensus on this bill now? Senator, I see some heads nodding yes in the background. Would anybody like to testify on this bill in opposition? All right. Seeing none, we've got the...
There's no fiscal.
We open
no fiscal.
Okay. So, Senator George, would you be willing to make the motion on this?
Mr. Chair, do we have the fiscal on this?
Mr. Chair, that was provided electronically to you. I'm not sure it's in your packet. There is, we have been issued the notice of no expenditure impact. It's dated 4/14 on the Dash 3, Mr. Chair.
It's a fiscal statement?
Mm-hmm. Okay. A statement, there was no fiscal.
No expenditure
impact. Dash 3 amendments to 491?
Dash 3 is, yes.
Okay. Are we
more
time? We
are.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 491.
Senator George has moved the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 491. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator George.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 491 to the floor as amended by the Dash 3 amendments with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved Senate Bill 491 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator George.
I understand that this is a consensus bill with the amendments, and I'm going to vote yes on it. But there were some people that had expressed concerns to me, and I'm going to circle back around and make sure that everybody's fine with it. But it sounds like to me that everybody came to a consensus because nobody showed up here to testify against. So I am going to chat with a few people before it hits the floor, but as far as I know, I'm going to continue to vote yes. So I will vote yes today.
All right. Debbie, could you please call the roll?
Hi, are we voting on the Dash 3?
Did we vote on the amendment?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
We adopted it.
Okay, gotcha.
Senator Boquist?
Okay, yeah.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
Aye.
Chair Shields.
Chair votes aye, and just for clarification, Senator Bowles,
okay.
That was a yes
vote.
Tentative yes.
The motion carries. Senator Monroe, would you be willing to carry this?
I'd be happy
floor?
To.
All right. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 491.
Don't you give me any credit.
And
I won't.
I will.
Voted for the thing, okay? Give me a break.
I will open a work session on Senate Bill 667.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 667, heard on the 6th and the 11th of this month. It's a bill that permits public agencies to enter into indefinite quantity contracts for architectural engineering and land surveying services. You have in your packets a dash. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. We have adopted that. We adopted that amendment at our last meeting on the 11th. That amendment allows for contracts of architectural land surveying or related services. Specifies such contracts may not be for more than 3 years. Provides that a contract agency awarding indefinite quantity contract must award it to a certified disadvantaged minority women or emerging small business enterprise if the contract is for $100,000 or less. Specifies that this contracting agency must specify at the minimum quantity of services that a contract, the quantity that is equivalent to the cost of 5% of the total amount budgeted in the contract. You have in your packets, as along with the Dash 2 amendment, the notice of no revenue impact and also a fiscal impact statement, which we did not have at our last meeting. The fiscal impact statement essentially indicates that the measure will have an indeterminate fiscal impact, Mr. Chair.
All right. Mm-hmm. So You heard testimony about how some government entities are providing indefinite quantity contracts and essentially stringing the small business people along without being able to get work. This would help tighten that process up. ODOT still has some concerns about the bill and has agreed to be supportive of it on the Senate side, and will continue working with the parties who are primarily small engineering firms, continue working with them on the House side to as we go forward. So, Senator George, are you comfortable moving?
I suppose. No amendments needed, right?
No amendments needed.
We have them. We already did the number two.
We've already adopted them, correct?
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 667 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved Senate Bill 667 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, I'm supportive of the concept because I know how this scam works with IDIQs, having experienced it myself. A little concerned that, you know, the agencies couldn't come up with a fiscal, but I'll be supportive of it.
Further discussion? Debbie, could you please call the roll?
Agencies.
Aye.
Senator
Boquist.
Aye.
Senator Monroe.
Aye.
Vice Chair George.
Aye.
Chair Shields.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes, and I'll carry that one on the floor. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 667, and we'll open a public hearing on open a work session on Senate Bill 889. Patrick, tee us up to where we are here.
Yep. I just flip to that.
This is
your bill.
The dash twos.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 889, we heard this on March 30th. It's a measure that creates an Oregon Financing and Credit Authority to formulate and implement investment and management policies and practices for state funds controlled and administered by state agencies. You have in your packet a dash two amendment, which is a kind of a revision of the measure. That dash two amendment, we currently have a revenue impact statement, but no fiscal impact statement on this yet. And I should mention this measure has a subsequent referral to the Senate Finance and Revenue, and then a subsequent referral of that to Joint Ways and Means, Mr. Chair.
It's Finance and Revenue.
No, that's been the case all along,
okay.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Okay, so we have the dash twos in front of us. If anybody needs clarification on what the dash twos do, we do have someone from the Treasurer's Office as well as the proponents. Otherwise, all we're doing is moving the dash twos in, and we don't have a fiscal back, so we won't be moving the bill today.
Okay.
So are you comfortable moving the dash twos?
We're just moving them in, and we're just holding
it. Just
in. Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 889, dated April 11th.
Senator George has moved the dash two amendments, and the Senate Bill 889 is their discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Since it has to go to two more committees, why do we have to have all the paperwork to move it out of this committee?
Because they made a rule and we voted on it.
Patrick?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, our rules require us to have the paperwork to move a bill to any other committee unless we're moving the bill without recommendation. And usually in that case, it's only without having had a hearing first, if we're doing it just for purposes of being referred to a different committee. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, last session I voted against those rules. There was a lone person that voted against us, and we all had to come back and amend those rules. This time I was assured if I voted for it, there wouldn't be any problems. I should have voted against it.
Is that on the record, Tim?
That's on the record.
So we have the dash twos before us. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 889 until we get the fiscal impact statement back. And that hasn't come in the last half hour. Okay. All right. So I will open a work session on Senate Bill 372. Patrick.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 372, we heard way back in March 2nd, this is a measure that allows an injured person to retain from payments on claims the injured person reimbursement for both economic and non-economic damages prior to reimbursement of personal injury protection benefits paid by an insurer. We don't have any amendments to this measure. We have received a notice of minimal expenditure impact dated 228 and no revenue impact dated 129, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So we are in work session. Why don't I ask Senator Bonamici for the motion?
And no amendments?
No amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 372 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Bonamici has moved Senate Bill 372 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator George.
This is a bill that came up for our committee last session, and I think the advocates for the bill have really pretty much convinced me that there's a problem. I've talked to the insurance industry, and they've sort of given it another side, and I'm at this point, last session I was adamantly opposed to the bill. I've moved to where I definitely see the reason for the bill, and I'm trying to kind of get a grip on exactly where the problem is and how we can kind of come to some kind of agreement on the thing, because I think clearly it's been demonstrated to me that there is a problem that people are paying for insurance coverage that are in essence not getting. If you guys have a majority on the committee, I'd like to still stay a no vote at this point, but I do want to say to anybody who's still opposing the bill that I think that the advocates are gaining momentum on this particular piece of legislation, and I would just want to make sure I say that on the record.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Senator George. Senator Boquist.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I've had the proponents and the opponents in my office at least twice. Both of them explained it. Both of them explained it exactly opposite. And I don't have a problem with the 2 years portion. The economic damage is the top. I suppose if I had more time, I'd go down to Dexter and have him explain it to me, because I'd have a third party who'd referee between two statements one way and two statements the other side. But in the meantime, I'll be a no vote.
All right. Thank you very much. All right, so we have a motion. Any further discussion? Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
No.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
No.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Senator Bonamici, would you carry this on the floor? And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 372.
I noticed everybody holding their breath.
Just giving you plenty of time if you want to work your options. Okay, and I will open a hearing on Senate Joint Memorial 10. Patrick?
Oh, yes, that one is easy to find. It's on the bottom, Mr. Chair.
Which bill?
SJM 10.
Thank you. Senate Joint Memorial 10, we heard on April 4th. This is the one that urges Congress to enact legislation to assist the FDIC and National Credit Union Share Insurance Fund in establishing a voluntary system of full insurance for public funds accounts. We have no amendment to the measure. We have a notice of no expenditure impact and no revenue impact. Mr. Chair, all ready to go.
All right. No amendments necessary. Senator George, are you comfortable making a motion on this? Senator Bonamici, would you like to make a motion?
I move SJM 10 to the floor with a, how do we do this, do adopt recommendation?
Yes.
Senator Bonamici has moved SJM 10 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none? All right. Get at it.
I don't understand the ramifications of this memorial. I really don't understand the ramifications of it. And I have read through it, and I've tried to understand exactly what we're getting at here, and I just can't support it until I understand it a little better. So I'm a no.
Fair enough. Further discussion? Debbie, please call the roll.
Aye.
Sure.
Aye.
Vice Chair George?
No.
Chair Shields?
Chair votes aye.
The marginal
motion passes, and thank goodness Senator Edwards will carry this bill on the floor.
Yes, of course.
So I will close the work session on Senate Joint Memorial 10, and we'll stand at ease for just a moment. I want to have a discussion with Patrick here if we could stand at ease for a minute. And we will be carrying over everything that we did not take action on today to put that on the record, and that with no further business before the committee, correct? This meeting is adjourned.